Mike the Rotocop, Randy Haynes, Colin Weatherwax here for another edition of the Dirt Dogs podcast presented by Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And this might be the most exciting podcast that we've done this far because there's actually baseball being played. And I know some of us had a couple of rough weeks. Some of us had a couple a good week so far. And we'll see how the weekend goes and see how it ends up this week. But Colin and Randy, I know you guys have a ton to talk about, so let's get right into it. Colin, you first. I know you have a bunch of things on your list that you want to speak about real quick.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to touch on some of the, you know, crazier things to start off the season. I know it's a small sample size. I don't really want to get into, you know, all the statistics, but just kind of the few things that have, you know, stood out to me to start off the season. One of the biggest things I think that that might be the hottest take I have is about Billy Hamilton. So he started off the year batting towards the bottom of the lineup, and then you know, he's led off a couple times, but he's led off against left-handed pitchers, and that's definitely his worst side of the split. So I'm very concerned about him, about his plate appearances, about his counting stats. I think he's still going to get his steals, and everyone knew that, you know, his average was terrible to begin with. But now he's going to get probably between 100 and 150 plate appearances less than usual. And I think with all of his, you know, all of his flaws, I think he might be borderline unownable.
So I saw a funny tweet on Hamilton today is from @ChapoDong, and I'll read it to you. I see Billy Hamilton is where he belongs, in the number 8 spot. One step closer to the minors, where he belongs. Can't steal a bag if you never get on base. Only thing he steals consistently is Joey Votto's Gatorade cup. So I thought that was pretty funny. Randy, what are your thoughts on Hamilton here in his slow start?
Yeah, I've never been a huge Hamilton fan to begin with. I don't think he's a good baseball player, and he probably should be hitting eighth or, you know, ninth behind the pitcher, depending on how they want to mix things up that day. If for fantasy purposes, I don't think he should be dropped just because of the threat of speed and the state of the game right now. But I do think if you have, and the problem is if you drafted Billy Hamilton, you probably didn't draft a lot of excess speed. But if you're in a scenario where you do have some and you have Hamilton, this is one of the few players I think I'd be actively trying to shop this early in the season, because it doesn't look good. It seems like the Reds are finally just to the point where they aren't going to lead him off. They're not going to keep trying to make it happen. You know, they're going to keep, you know, they're going to throw him out there until it gets to the point where maybe they can trade him and get something for him in real life. But I think his fantasy value is starting to plummet, and we could be talking in 2 months and he might actually be unearnable. But as of now, I don't think you can drop him.
But would you sell him at his price right now? Because I think, you know, most people spent a 6th, 7th round pick on him, and then, you know, we already see the effects of him batting, you know, towards the bottom of the lineup, him not getting on base still. So would you sell him low in that essence and try and get someone, you know, that might be dropped even sooner than Billy Hamilton?
I wouldn't give him away, but I would definitely go out there if there was a team that, after your draft, was easily identifiable as the low team in steals projections, or you just look at their roster. Maybe they're the team that lost a liner to Shields, and they were banking on DeShields and maybe one other guy for some speed. So maybe you just throw something out there. If that guy's not buying, he's not buying. But I would entertain the idea of trying to move Hamilton in the next couple of weeks before things get worse.
So I'm pretty much probably who you're talking about, Randy, because I took Billy Hamilton in NFBC, and when I did it, I told you guys I hate Billy Hamilton. I've never owned Billy Hamilton, but I did it. I did it, and I can't go back now. So I took Hamilton. I took DeShields. I took Malik Smith. I took Gerard Dyson. I took all these guys for steals. And Chuck Anderson, one of our guys at FWFB, said, I think you bought into speed too much. Now, a week and a half later, I'm looking at it. DeShields is out for 6 weeks. Hamilton is basically virtually doing absolutely nothing. Malik Smith doesn't even play. Souza's coming back early, so Dyson's on his way out of the starting lineup there. So now I'm sitting here thinking I had too much speed at one point, and now I have no speed. And taking Hamilton in the 6th round, 63rd overall, when I could have, I don't even want to look at the draft board because I don't want to see who I passed up on. But I'm sure I could have got somebody really good instead of Hamilton for that spot. And that could really hurt me down the line if Hamilton does end up losing the playing time, because he's not going to play if he doesn't get on base. Because if he doesn't get on base, he doesn't steal, and so on and so on. So it's really not a good situation to be a Billy Hamilton owner right now.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. But if you can, that's what I was saying. If you can get something for him now that's of decent value, that's an ownable asset, so to speak, I would do it. But it's a long season. You know, Scott Schebler's already got a little elbow thing going on, so maybe that ends up you know, costing him some more plate appearances down the road. And where, you know, Hamilton gets there and he's stealing just often enough to make it worth keeping on the back end of your starting lineup. And he gets you this, hopefully, you know, 60-70% of the speed that you were projecting when you drafted him. But it's definitely raises my flag for concern.
Yeah, so throughout this episode, we'll talk about a bunch of people that had slow starts, a bunch of people who have hot starts so far. And Dylan Bundy, one of your guys, Randy, obviously has the hot start so far. And I know you want to talk about him a little bit. What do you got on Bundy?
Well, it's exciting as an Orioles fan, but it's also exciting from any fantasy owner that's been playing for any length of time. The hype that Bundy had when he was drafted by the Orioles and his kind of quick rise, you know, through the minor league system until he suffered Tommy John surgery. It's very exciting. He's getting a lot of swings and misses. He's not walking people. Still giving up a little bit of some hits and some hard contact to lefties. In his start against Minnesota, everybody saw the home run that Craig Gentry robbed in the first inning of the game. And there was a couple other like warning track fly balls that once things heat up here in Baltimore over the summer, those are probably leaving the yard. So I think we should temper the expectations for Bundy a little bit. I don't see a huge 2.75 ERA breakout, but the strikeout should be there. You know, health, he's been pretty healthy, you know, since he stayed in the rotation for a while now. So I, you know, temper the expectations a little bit on Bundy, but it's very exciting. I think there's definitely a top 35 season potential from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, there's definitely that potential. And I know, you know, preseason, you were surprised with me, Randy, because I was actually higher than you on Dylan Bundy. So I definitely bought into the prospect hype. I'm so glad that we had Nick Pollock, the pitcher list, on the podcast, because now I feel like I have an edge up whenever I tweet at him, because I tweeted at him for a couple guys this past week and just said, hey, show me this, show me this, show me this. And so one of the ones that I was following was Dylan Bundy, and he had a nasty slider in his first and second start.
Slider looks great.
Yeah, the slider looks excellent. And that was one of the pitches that he was scared to throw coming back from Tommy John. So I like to see him healthy. I like to see him performing the way that, you know, me and Randy thought that he could. And I'm definitely looking to get him. I'm hoping for that top 35 season, like you said, Randy. I'm looking to trade for him. I'm looking to pick him up if he's still out there. All that, I'm buying into the hype.
And an interesting stat on Bundy, he's the first Oriole since 1966 to start a season with two consecutive starts of 6-plus innings and 7-plus strikeouts with one or fewer earned runs, which is kind of shows the lack of pitching Baltimore's had in the history of the Baltimore Orioles, that he's only the second pitcher ever to do that. First one,
it's
since
Birdland, baby. It's Birdland.
So Bundy's definitely, with the slider, trending in the right direction. And there's another guy that's trending in the right direction that you guys wanted to speak about. One of them was Johnny Cueto, who's really got off to a fast start here. I don't think he's let up an earned run yet. He faced a good Seattle lineup. It was without Nelson Cruz, but it's still a good lineup either way. You got Segura, Gordon, Cano, and whoever else they have now in that lineup. But Colin, talk to me a little bit about Johnny Cueto and his, I guess, kind of bounce back or resurrection.
Yeah, I think it is a bounce back. And he did play against, you know, that terrible team in Seattle. I can't remember the name. But, yeah, I think his bounce back has been coming just because of the blister issue that he had last year. That was basically everything. All of his problems, you know, formed from that blister issue. I know he got a year older, but he still looks like that ace. He has the deception in his delivery that still throws people off. He's lost a couple miles per hour, but I still think in that ballpark, he was very undervalued in the draft season, and I think he could be an SP3 and borderline SP2 this year.
Randy, what are your thoughts on Cueto?
I'm in the range of Colin. I would like to see a little more strikeouts so far from Cueto. I think he only had one that last outing. Cueto was never a high strikeout guy, you know, even 2-3 years ago when he was at his best. But you would like to see more than just one strikeout over six innings from a starter. But he was always, you know, a control guy. He kept, you know, gave you good ratios. So it is a very good sign so far through two starts. He's obviously still pitching in San Francisco. So even when he is off, like he was, you know, the other day giving up some hits and some walks, the ballpark is there to back him up. So I'm pretty excited about Cueto going forward.
And on the opposite end of the spectrum, a guy that everybody's not too excited about, and there's a lot of questions about, maybe he's overrated now, maybe St. Louis did the right thing by not going after him, trading Jordan Hicks or whatever prospects that the Tampa wanted for him, Chris Archer. What's his deal? You think he really is overrated, or you think he's going to bounce back from this little hiccup he's got here? Because he's never really been an ERA guy. He's always been more of a strikeout guy. So what are your thoughts here on Chris Archer, Colin?
I do think he's overrated. So I did put in our chat the other day that I think it was a hot take that he was overrated, and I heard a couple people say I don't really think that's a hot take. So there's a lot of people that are on the bandwagon. So with Chris Archer, I think he might just be that strikeout pitcher. And so if you own him, what I would suggest is if someone still sees him as a top 10 pitcher, then try and trade him to them. And then if not, what I would try and do is I would try and balance out, you know, the ratios, because his ratios have been bad. He plays in a great pitcher's park, so I don't understand it. But, you know, getting an Andrew Miller, getting a Josh Hader, getting guys, like I said, in the preseason, just that will kind of balance out that ratio difference that Chris Archer gives you. So with him having the higher ERA, high whip, I don't see him as a SP1. He's still borderline SP2 for me with those ratios, and all he's providing me is Ks. So that's a little bit iffy for me. That's why if you have him, try and deal him to someone that believes in him, or try and deal him or try and surround him with guys that are going to make his ratios.
What I was going to say is I'm a pretty big Archer fan. I enjoy watching the guy pitch, and I think he is really talented. And maybe he is a tick overrated, but for me, this isn't anything I didn't expect. He's a huge strikeout guy, but because of the division that he pitches in, you know, there's gonna be a 4 ERA there. It's just there's no way around it. You know, the start he had in Yankee Stadium the other day, all it takes is for one guy to get on, and then he's going through the heart of that lineup. There's a home run, and next thing you know, it's a four run outing. And it doesn't look as good, but if you go through and watch, and he had some pretty dominant innings, and he still got really good stuff. The first start of this year against Boston, same thing. There was that fluke inside the park home run from Eduardo Nunez that probably should have been a single. Worst case, a double, and ended up being an inside the park home run. And there was a man on for that as well. Might have even been two men on. So there's a little bit of bad luck so far to speak with him this season. But if anyone was expecting, you know, a low threes or even a high twos ERA from Archer, they were fooling themselves, and they deserve to be disappointed. So I have Archer in a couple places, and I built my staff in those leagues around him, probably having a 4 ERA, not having a whip below like 1.25, but a boatload of strikeouts, and he's going to take them out every fifth day. He's a really good pitcher. So yes, he's overrated, but not as much as you're thinking.
So, Randy, I have a hot take a little bit. So, would you prefer Cole? Yeah, would you prefer Garrett Cole or Chris Archer?
I had Archer ahead of Cole in the preseason, and even though I really loved what Cole looked like that first start, he was getting a lot of swings and misses. It's only 1 week. I don't want to overreact yet, so I still have Archer just a tick ahead of him, but it could change in 3 weeks, and nothing that Archer's done. It's just that first start from Cole is the Garrett Cole we've been looking for a few years now, with a lot of strikeouts. So I still have Archer ahead of him, but I might be changing that here in a couple
for
weeks.
For me it's Cole. So I know it's 1 week, but I'm going all in.
when you put fantasy aside here, it's tough to evaluate a pitcher pitching in the AL East, and it's kind of unfair to Archer here that he's faced Boston and the Yankees, which are two of the better offensive teams in the league, and we're critiquing him already on the runs he's given up against two of the premier offenses. So it is a little iffy as far as him being overrated for me, but I think if he would transition to a different team, maybe somebody in the National League where the opponents he's facing isn't as tough as he's facing in the AL East, his ERA will dip a little bit and the strikeouts will maybe even go up, which I don't even know if it's possible because he does strike everybody out pretty much that he faces. So yeah. I think that will definitely benefit him. A change of scenery would definitely benefit Chris Archer.
Yeah, and the one thing that is a downfall for Archer is the worst lineup in the AL East is his own. So it's not like he would ever have the benefit of facing Tampa Bay. You know, even when Baltimore and Toronto are going through their struggles, they can hit the long ball, which is his Achilles heel. So if he got traded to basically any other division, his value should go up, and I would expect better performances. But for as of now, he kind of is what he is, and you had to, you know, kind of plan things around and build your staff around a guy like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think he's a product of his environment at this point until the change of scenery comes, which will definitely benefit him. Now, Adam Eaton last year got hurt first game of the season, tore his ACL. He is back, and he's probably hotter than ever. And now, barring the little ankle injury where he twisted his ankle, whatever, his knee. So he's out for, did they say the time yet? Or is it indefinitely? What is it?
I think it's just a day-to-day.
Day-to-day, yeah. Okay. And Trey Turner started off the season batting sixth. Everybody was in an uproar that he was batting sixth. He might not get the stolen base opportunities that he was going to get at the top of the lineup. His runs might be affected by this. Colin, talk to me a little bit about Adam Eaton's hot start and Trey Turner batting sixth to start the season.
Yeah, so Adam Eaton, I was definitely on board. I was on board last year. The injury was a freak injury. It was terrible because I had so many shares last year. But I bought back in this year. It's a little bit different than, you know, someone just actually having a poor season and then you're trying to buy back in. So I bought back in this season. Very happy with his hot start. But Trey Turner batting sixth was the biggest thing for me. So going into the season, I thought, you know, being the minor guy that I am in the fantasy baseball universe, that Eaton might be leading off and then Trey would definitely be in that second hole or vice versa. So whenever the lineup comes out, I was like, okay, that's a little interesting with Rendon batting second. And then Davey Martinez said, you know, they don't want to leave the best hitter on the on-deck circle if the game's on the line. So I thought that was a little interesting. And then it kept happening. And then whenever Eaton got a day off, Trey would move back to the first leadoff. So whenever you have a first-round pick that slides so far down in the lineup, it's very hurtful for your team. He's not going to get very many plate appearances, not as many as last year. He might be able to run a little bit more because there isn't the superstars behind him. And he's always going to have that, I think, 20 home run potential, but losing those plate appearances is very detrimental for a first round pick. So I was a little nervous. I still am a little nervous. I don't think I'm ready to sell him yet, but I do have my eyebrow raised on Trey Turner.
Yeah, I don't think you can sell Turner, but everything you said was correct, Colin. I mean, that the plate appearances are obviously going to be less as long as he stays down there for the majority of the season. The runs scored will be less. But you hit on the steals. I don't think that'll change too much because, like you said, he's not going to be hitting or he's not going to be on first base with Bryce Harper up, and they're not going to put the red light up. So I do think that he'll have a chance to run just as much. I wasn't taking Turner where he was, you know, going in, you know, in ADP in the beginning of the season at 3, 4, 5. I just wasn't doing that. You know, he's not good to me, not a good enough hitter to justify being selected that high. But you took him, you don't want to sell low on a guy like that, especially with Eaton's injury history and Harper's injury history and Rendon's injury history. You know, they're one injury away from Turner popping back up to first or second in that lineup. And if it's an injury for any length of time, he could be there for a while. So I don't think it's time to panic yet. You just maybe need to temper your expectations for Turner going forward.
So it is interesting, and I'm going to touch on Turner in a second. Colin, I just want you to know I'm watching the Braves-Rockies game right now on TV, and Ian Desmond's up with his dirty mustache that makes me hate him even more. He's got a mustache that's going below his lower lip there. So I don't know what he's working on, a little Fu Manchu, but he's on fire, so it's working
for him. I hope he cuts himself shaving and goes on the DL.
But back to Turner quick here. He was a top pick, and nobody was expecting a top pick to be hitting sixth in a lineup. Now, the Nationals are struggling a little bit. They just lost 2 of 3 to the Braves. They lost to the Mets yesterday. So their bats aren't really clicking right now, so maybe that will affect the lineup change for Dave Martinez. But we'll see how that turns out, because you need Adam Eaton at the top of the lineup the way he's hitting now. And you want Rendon. More and more teams these days are having their best player or second best player batting second instead of where they usually would bat either third or fourth. So they want Rendon at the top of the lineup. But something's going to have to change here if their bats aren't clicking. So that'll be interesting to watch in Washington. Now, in the same league here, in the National League, the Dodgers obviously can't hit. They lost 2 games off Joe Panik's solo home runs, which obviously killed them. Their starting pitching has been great, besides the whole velocity issue with Kershaw and Jansen, which you could probably spend the whole podcast talking about that stuff alone. But their starting pitching has been great. Everybody's been good. Wood's been good. Hill's been good. Wood had a little hiccup his last start. But talk to me a little bit about the Dodgers not hitting, Randy.
They weren't the greatest lineup, at least for me coming in. They were still a potent enough lineup, but I think it's just one of those things where, you know, they were going to have a bad 2-week stretch at some point during the season, and it just happened to be the first 2 weeks of the season for them. There's not really, other than the Justin Turner injury, there's nothing else to really point to, so I wouldn't worry about it. And I'm not worried about Kershaw. I'm not worried about Kenley Jansen. It's just, you know, sometimes teams, you know, they have their worst 2 weeks of the season right off the bat. So it can kind of skew how we view them over the long haul.
See, I'm a little worried a bit about Jansen. I'm not worried about Kershaw. I'm a little worried about Jansen. And he kind of has the attitude that he doesn't think anything's wrong. So I don't know if that's just stubbornness and him not realizing what's going on here and not wanting to accept it. Or maybe there actually isn't anything wrong. But you're giving up homers to Chris Owings to tie the game in the ninth inning. That stuff doesn't usually happen for Kenley Jansen. So it is a little bit weird to see with the velocity being down. As far as the Dodgers hitting goes, I don't think everybody realized how big of a loss Justin Turner actually was. I mean, this guy's obviously the heart of the team, and you're just seeing that. And the results are reflecting that now without him in the lineup. He pretty much is the catalyst that makes everything go. So Justin Turner being out, I think him coming back will be a huge boost to that offense and to the Dodgers, and we'll probably start seeing them hit a little bit more normal than they usually are. Colin, what do you think about the Dodgers and their hitting struggles?
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I think Justin Turner is the heart of that team, and we can see it now. I projected Cody Bellinger and Corey Seager to kind of fall off from their seasons last year. I'm just worried about Corey Seager's injury history and, of course, worried about Cody Bellinger's regression. So taking Justin Turner out of that lineup, you know, it's going to put more pressure on them to perform, and I don't think that they're up to it yet. And then to piggyback on Kenley Jansen, you know, as a guy that took him in the fourth round in the main event, I'm a little bit, you know, concerned. I'm not too happy with taking that pick now because I thought I was going to get, you know, a couple saves in the first week, and instead I get a couple blown saves. So I'm a little bit upset about that. I hope and I think that he will turn it around and figure it out. And Clayton Kershaw, I don't have anything to say. He's going to be a beast the rest of the season. I'm not worried about him one bit.
Just a little bit more on the Dodgers here. They do have a lot of question marks entering the season that not many people are talking about as far as offensively. Chris Taylor had a breakout season, which he never did before. Bellinger broke out onto the scene. People are locking this guy in for 40-plus homers. He struggled so much in that World Series. The Astros might have found the book on him, and the book might be out now. Stone breaking ball, breaking ball, breaking ball, and until he adjusts, he might not be able to hit the 40 homers that everyone is expecting. So there are some question marks around the Dodgers and a couple of guys in their lineup. Now, one more player I want to touch on before we move on here, and we talked about him in the last pod, Kingery, who Colin spent all his fab on, or pretty much all his fab, it was like 40%, over 40%, right?
Yeah, over
40%. So he's playing four positions. He's going to have position eligibility all across the board. And he batted third yesterday. I'm not sure. I don't, off the top of my head, know what he did yesterday, but I know he batted third. Talk to me a little bit, Colin, about your investment in Scott Kingery and what you've seen so far.
So he went 0-for-4 yesterday out of the three hole. He did score a run and get a steal, though, so he did provide me something. I see him for this year being a good Marwin Gonzalez, because I do not believe in Marwin Gonzalez. I think Scott Kingery can provide me with 20 home runs, 25 steals, and close to a .280 batting average, and that's what I said on the last podcast. That's what made me pay as much as I did for him. The one thing that's going to get in his way is Gabe Kapler. And I hate the guy already. I thought he was going to be great because he's an analytics guy. But I need him to play Scott Kingery. I'm going to send him an email as soon as we get done with this podcast and tell him, look, I spent $407 on this guy. You have to make sure he's on the field for me. So if you can't do that, then I'm just going to go higher. I'm going to go to your GM and I'm just going to tell him, look, we might have to make a change.
So not so much on Kingery here for me, but I, you guys know, I saw Brian Kinney speak at Hofstra the other day. He gave like an hour and 15-minute lecture on his book and a couple other things, the way he approaches baseball analytics. And one of the things he did talk about was Gabe Kapler. And he was saying that everyone's so quick to rush judgment on Kapler, saying he's going to fail, blah, blah, blah. It's only been a week. Give him time. So he obviously still believes that Kapler can succeed doing this whole bullpenning thing, bringing nine relievers into one game and then eight relievers the next day. So whatever it is, he thinks Gabe Kapler has the right idea of what's going on here, and he's not as concerned as most people are. So it was interesting to see that kind of take from him. I know, Colin, we talked about this off the air, and Gabe Kapler, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, so I'm a little nervous about Aaron Nola because in the preseason I was hyping Aaron Nola and a Gerrit Cole, you know, stack as my SP1 out of two pitchers. So if he's only going to go five innings every start, it's not going to look as good. And especially in his first start, whenever he was dominating the Braves, and even the Braves hitters were like, you know, why would you take this guy out? Why take out a guy that's absolutely mauling us? and bring in someone else. That way we can get a different look. And then, of course, they went on to win that game. So that just started the downhill roll for Gabe Kapler. So I hope he figures it out. I think Aaron Nola is going to be a top 15-20 pitcher this year as long as Gabe Kapler doesn't get in the way. So I'm going to include that in my email about Scott Kingery. Just throw in Aaron Nola, and we'll be good, Gabe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pitching stuff, he'll get it figured out. You can't keep, you know, ruining everybody's arm out of your bullpen just to save your starters an inning here and there. I do think he'll figure that out. But as far as the lineup goes, you know, maybe the construction on a day-to-day basis is interesting. But I don't really know what everybody expects him to do when you've got essentially 10 major league everyday players at his disposal, and he only has 8 spots for them. You know, so somebody's going to, you know, take, you know, somebody's going to rest. And Nick Williams and Aaron Altair can't just be guys that sit on the bench, you know, 5 out of 6 games. Those guys got to get in there. Same thing with J.P. Crawford. He's still got to develop. You know, they're not getting ready to give up on Michael Franco yet. Cesar Hernandez is a very, very good, very underrated player. And they just paid Carlos Santana. And they're not going to bench Rhys Hoskins. So I don't really know what people expect Kapler to have happen in terms of making the lineup. So they almost need a trade or an injury to clear things out for us fantasy owners. But from a hitting, from making a lineup and a hitting standpoint, I don't have any problem with what Kapler's doing. It's just an embarrassment of riches kind of thing.
Yeah, I was looking at it today. I looked at their past, you know, 3 or 4 lineups that he submitted. And like we were talking about, Kingery batted out of the 3-hole or the 4-hole yesterday. But a couple days before, Nick Williams batted out of the 3-hole, and he's his 4th outfielder. So he could be taking that analytical approach and just saying, okay, well, this guy does good against this pitcher or this kind of pitcher. So it is interesting. I think throughout the course of the season, it will balance out. I think it might show, you know, maybe this guy's on to something. But right now I am a little nervous about, you know, the playing time for my guys.
So I know we could sit here all day and critique real-life baseball managers. Let me put you guys in the shoes of real-life baseball managers, and I want to know what you guys would do in these closer situations that are going on in Milwaukee and Los Angeles. Obviously, Corey Knebel got hurt yesterday. He's going to be out a minimum of 6 weeks, and they got a bunch of guys here who could close, starting with Josh Hader, Matt Albers, Jacob Barnes, Jeremy Jeffries. I even saw Jennings today as on the list of guys who might possibly close. Randy, you're Craig Counsell. Who are you going with?
I would probably, I mean, honestly, I'd probably mix and match between Hader and Barnes. I think those are the two most talented arms he's got in that bullpen. If I had to guess, I think they're going to go with Barnes, but I was looking at it today, and there hasn't really been a usage pattern. And they've only played, I think, 7 games, so it's kind of hard to pick up any kind of pattern of anything after 7 games. But it seems like Barnes would be that next guy in line. And even though everybody loves Barnes, throws 96, 97, big strikeout guy, he had some walk issues last year, gave up a couple extra home runs compared to previous in his career. So this isn't a lockdown, you know, decision, at least for me. I'd probably mix and match with Hader and Barnes.
So I put this question on my Twitter, and if you were to turn to Craig Counsell, who do you turn to? If you were Craig Counsell, who do you turn to in the 9th inning? And I included Hader on the list. This was before they said they weren't going to use him. They still want him in that multi-inning role. Matt Barnes got 48% of the vote. Matt Barnes. Jacob Barnes got 48% of the vote. Matt Albers got 19, and Jeffries got 7%. Colin, do you agree with the poll here? You would go with Barnes if you had the choice?
So I think it might start off with Barnes. One of the things I was listening to today, and one of the things that I just believe in Josh Hader, and y'all know this, I think he needs to just, you know, he needs to play the matchups with Josh Hader, make him be his multi-inning guy, because their pitching staff isn't the best as it is now, so he can be their long relief guy. And then one of the things that I saw is that Matt Albers might get some more chances than Barnes because he has the experience. He's a little bit older. He can kind of work the count and all that. So right now, whenever I got home, I made a couple claims for both of them. So I picked up Albers in 2 leagues. I picked up Barnes in 1 league. I do think it was a very scary injury whenever we were watching it. I know it kind of blew up our chat. And I watched the video, and it looked like an ACL, but he was just grabbing the back of it. So luckily, it was just his hamstring. I only have 1 share. But Randy, I know you said you like to mix and match the matchups. as far as being a closer, and that's not what us fantasy guys want to hear, man.
Oh, yeah, I know it's not what fantasy I know it's not what fantasy owners want to hear. And Barnes actually is somebody that they've used kind of like Hader in a multi-inning relief role last year. He's already got a two-inning relief outing this year. So, like I say, I would not be shocked at all if Matt Albers gets the first save chance. And this could be a situation where, because he has so many options, and it's not just, you know, like a team that we're going to talk about in a little bit, they maybe their options aren't the greatest. He's got decent options here at his disposal. So as soon as somebody has a, you know, an implosion, he can just go to the next guy. And Jeffers has closed for that club before too, so I wouldn't completely rule him out. I do think he's a little lower in the pecking order. But it could be one of those things where they want to keep Hader and Barnes for multi-inning relief appearances, especially now that they know they don't have Knebel at the back end to lock down. Because Knebel is somebody that could get four or five outs in the past if he needed to. So maybe Albers does step into there.
Personally, I think Barnes is the way to go here right off the bat. Like I was saying in the group chat, he already does have a save this season. He got an extra innings. It was after the game that Knebel blew, if I'm not mistaken. So I think Barnes is definitely the speculative ad here. But I could also see it going the other way in Albers or Jeffries. But time will only tell with that, what Craig Council decides to do there. Mike Socha has kind of a similar issue here in Los Angeles. He's got Blake Parker, Middleton, and Cam Bedrosian, who it seemed like Blake Parker had the role. It started with Bedrosian when the first report came out in spring. Then it transitioned to Blake Parker, which Colin was very happy about because he drafted Parker in his main event. And now it seems like Middleton might get a shot, but then Middleton came in the tie game or the eighth inning of a game. I think it was yesterday or the day before. So where do you think they're going with this, Colin, being a Blake Parker owner?
So Mike Socha read my email that I sent him because he had a press conference the other day. He gave all the praise to Blake Parker, you know, says he still believes in him. With Middleton, I think he's just kind of the, you know, the hype right now. So I think he'll tail into the middle relief role. I think the main battle is going to be between Bedrosian and between Blake Parker. So whichever one stays healthy, whichever one turns it around faster. I know Bedrosian started off the year pretty good, but he's viable to get hurt, you know, any second. So I think Blake Parker might be the guy to still hold on to. I'm not making a rash decision on the Angels bullpen right now. I don't think that Middleton's the guy. I think it does come down to those other two guys. So what do you think on that, Randy? Which guy do you prefer?
I actually prefer Middleton in terms of a skills standpoint.
Okay.
I mean, I do think that Parker's going to get the next save chance. You know, Socha has been a nightmare for fantasy owners basically anytime he didn't have Houston Street. You know, if he's been trying to vary away from when he had him, it was always a nightmare last year. It was everybody and their mother in that bullpen got a save, I feel like. So, you know, and the other guy, the thing with Bedrosian is he's been pitching in like the sixth and seventh inning. So I don't see as him being the next guy in line. Blake Wood has actually been coming in, you know, later in games. Bedrosian has, you know, Jim Johnson's still there, but Jim Johnson was warming up in the fifth inning the other day. I don't think Socha's that dumb. I mean, maybe he is, but you know, I don't think that'll happen. So Middleton's actually the guy in this bullpen that I like the most. If Parker ends up in playing, Parker could end up being fine. He could have just had a couple rough outings. You know, I don't know how his spring went, but maybe he was a little behind the rest of the guys and ended up being fine. But I think if I had to spec in this bullpen, I'd go Middleton. Then I guess I'd go Bedrosian. But like I said, Blake Wood has been pitching deeper, or, you know, later in the ballgame than Bedrosian has here lately. So I think Bedrosian's off my radar for now.
Yeah, and it's definitely something to keep an eye on because they basically haven't came out and said anything about this, so everyone's just kind of waiting to see where that next save opportunity goes. So later in the show, we're going to talk about FAB and who you should really target during this weekend, whenever your FAB is, Sunday, Monday. I know in our staff league, it was supposed to be today, but it got moved back, and that kind of threw me off because I thought I had some pretty good ads that people are going to get a chance at now this weekend. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm going to name some guys here, some more guys. I'm going to give you their stats, and I just want to know, kind of bounce off each other here, what your thoughts on them are. The name of the segment I sent you guys was Get These Stats. You guys aren't wrestling fans, so you probably didn't understand it. There's a guy in wrestling, Braun Strowman.
Not at all.
He says, get these hands. So Get These Stats is kind of the way I wanted to go with it. We'll start off with Giancarlo Stanton, who actually just hit an RBI single against your Orioles as we speak. He started off before that at bat, hitting 185 with 13 strikeouts and 27 at bats. Randy, talk to me about what you've seen from Stanton so far.
He looks like Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, he's in even last year's MVP season. He has 25 plate appearance samples where he you know, he looks like he doesn't have a clue. All it takes is a couple, you know, a couple hits here and there, and then all of a sudden he's locked in and he's the scariest hitter in the league. So I'm not worried one iota.
Colin?
Surprisingly, I'm kind of at a loss for words because I agree with Randy. Stanton, you know, he has all the pressure on the world in the world on him. He has all the eyes in New York on him. And so he's stressing. He's trying to perform, especially in that first game whenever he struck out five times to the aforementioned Chris Archer. But, yeah, he's going to turn it around. He's hitting 185 now. I wouldn't be surprised the next show he's hitting 400.
And typical Yankee fans booing him at Yankee Stadium after going 0 for 5. So
they can't have anything nice.
One guy that you seem to be very surprised on, Colin, and you were kind of down on him all offseason, and you told us in the chat the other day that this was one of the guys you're most surprised with, was Shohei Ohtani, who has 6 innings, 3 earned runs. Hitting-wise, he's 6 for 14, hitting .429 with 2 homers and 5 RBIs. And he hit that home run off Kluber, which was a big step in the right direction for Ohtani skeptics like you. Because if he's hitting homers off Kluber, he's going to hit homers off anybody. What do you think about Ohtani so far, Colin?
He's been phenomenal. And before all the hitting started, I really wanted to key in on his pitching. And like I said, I was watching the pitcher list on Twitter, and he went, you know, he had this devastating slider. He had the command. He struck out Mike Trout in 3 straight fastballs, or one of the A's hitter, I'm sorry. But then he hung one. She showed the nerves in that start against the A's, and he hung a slider to Matt Chapman. But his movement on his pitches, and then adding in the fact that he's a hitter and he hit 2 home runs in his first 2 starts at DH, it's insane. And I think the hype, it's starting to back him now. I might be eating crow on Ohtani come later in the season if he does turn out to be worth a 6th-round pick. Unfortunately, I don't have any shares, so I won't be able to reap any benefits. But he is a wonder to watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing his next start.
Yeah, I thought he looked great in that start. And even the home run that he allowed, you know, if there's nobody on, we're not really talking about it as being as, was it a good start, was it not? So he had a couple of guys on, he gave up a bomb. And that's a solo homer, and I think people are actually going even more crazy about Ohtani. So it looked really good. Don't want to get too crazy on one start, but his, you know, terrible spring numbers didn't bother me that much, you know, to begin with. Where I'm surprised is the hitting, because I didn't expect this at all. You know, the home run off of Josh Tomlin, people were joking that shouldn't count. But then, you know, he backs it up. He backs it up with the home run off of Corey Kluber. And if you're in he might be that ultimate asset if you're in a daily lineup league, you know, because you can flex him in and out of there if you get the lineups in time, or if you have some off days or whatever. Like today, he's DHing, and I think half the teams in the league are off. So if you're in a daily lineup league, there's no reason you can't get him into your lineup and hope you get something out of it.
Yeah, and Randy, I just got a message. I don't know if this is true, but I see that you just offered Mike Trout for Shohei Ohtani. Is that right?
No, that wasn't me. That was somebody else.
Okay. Well, I mean, you said you liked the guy, so I didn't know if you were going on that, jumping on the bandwagon that hard.
I don't love him like you love Robbie Ray, so.
Ohtani really did look great in his start. He was throwing 100 consistently, 99, 100 consistently. So we'll see what happens his next start, which everybody's definitely going to be tuned in for. Another pitcher who's off to a hot start, and Nick gave us this guy. Con, you agreed with him. Randy, you agreed with him. I was a little bit skeptical. David Price, 14 innings pitch, no runs, 10 strikeouts. I know you're happy about this one, Colin, right?
Yeah, I have him in the main event, and I was actually on your side, Mike, whenever we had Nick come on the podcast, and I was a little bit skeptical just based on the injury history, and he kind of opened my eyes a little bit, so I looked into him, and I was brave enough to draft him in the main event. The problem that I see is he's had 2 starts against Tampa Bay, and they are a top 10 strikeout team in the league right now. He's only K'd 10 guys so far, and he's using his slider a lot more than he has in the past. So I think a lot of pitchers are going that way and straying away from using the fastball. But as for his start, I want to see it against a real offense, because Tampa Bay is not a real offense. So I want to see that, but I am very excited about the start. I think that he can build on it, and I'm looking forward to seeing him keep doing it for my main event.
Yeah, kind of. You you brought up, I mean, the one thing, the knock against Price so far is that it was two starts against Tampa Bay. But he's I didn't see much of the second start, but the first start that he had, I watched almost the entire thing, and he looked like vintage Price. Velocity was down maybe a little bit, but he was painting the corners. You know, he was working the edges of the plate, moving stuff in and out. Two seamer looked really good, you know, coming in and catching the plate. So again, we want to see it against a team that isn't Tampa Bay, but my hopes are really high for Price going forward, as long as his health holds up.
What about Patrick Corbin? What do you guys think your hopes are for him? Because he has 13 innings pitched, 20 strikeouts. He's 2-0 with a 1.38 ERA. And I read a tweet today from Eno Saris that was saying that he's being aided by the humidor. His pitches are moving more. I think it was a slider that he was speaking of specifically. What are your thoughts on Corbin so far, Andy?
Yeah, I've never been a huge Corbin guy. There's just too much inconsistency there for me. You know, he at least has my attention so far, but I'm not ready to go. No, I'm not ready to go all in on Corbin. So I still think there's some blowups in there. And Justin actually brought up a point on Twitter. You know, I can't remember what day it was, about how awful his changeup has been so far this year, and he's really just doing all this off of two pitches. And you can get by doing it with two pitches if they're two really good pitches, but eventually against some better teams, you know, that's gonna catch up. And even when some of the lesser teams have more tape on him with what he's doing, maybe it starts to come back to normal. It's got my attention, but I'm not ready to go all in.
Colin, how about you?
Yeah, so Patrick Corbin, I'm very excited about him. The opening day starter for the Arizona Diamondbacks over my Robbie Ray. So that was a little upsetting, but once I saw his stuff and he's shut out two teams, so that's very exciting as well. He had the slider, which he's been throwing over 50% of the time. So like you were saying, Randy, he has those two pitches and then that changeup that Justin shared the other day, where it bounced from, I think, from the pitching mound all the way to the catcher.
Yeah, he rolled it there. Yeah, it's the first roll in history.
So if he can develop that at all, he might turn into a SP2 this year. But right now, if he just keeps that slider going, he's definitely got my attention.
Yeah, and I want to talk about two pitchers that I want you guys to compare and basically pick one of the two. Tyler Mahle and Jacob Junis, who both went Mahle went 6 innings, no runs, 7 Ks. Junis went 7 innings, no runs, 6 Ks. If you were to pick one of the two right now, who do you take, Randy?
Before the season, I would have said Mahle, and after the first two starts, or the first start from each of the two of them, I'm still on Mahle. I mean, what he did was against the Cubs, and what Junis did was, I believe, against, it was Detroit or the White Sox?
Tigers.
I think it was Detroit, right?
Detroit, I think.
Yeah, so again, like kind of like homering off of Josh Tomlin, a shutout against the Tigers is only like half a shutout, at least at this point, so I'm going to stick with Mahle. But they're both interesting, then they should both, if you're in anything 12-team or bigger, they're not owned, go grab them, because there's definitely potential there for both. But if I had to pick one, I'll pick Mahle.
Colin, you agree or disagree with Randy?
Of course I disagree. Is that really a question? No, my guy is definitely Jake Junis. He was one of the guys I was using the last round pick on in most of my leagues this year. And so he's actually available on one of my fab leagues. So I'm kind of contemplating how much I need to spend on him, because I do need the innings. And he looked great. The one thing with him, with the Royals, they would always keep him down in AAA, even as he was performing. He had a few injury scares, so now that he's healthy and he has that rotation spot on a lock, which Mahle kind of doesn't, because there's a few guys coming off of DL, like Finnegan, here pretty soon, so he could easily lose that job with one blow-up, and I think Jake Junis is pretty much solidified on that terrible Royals team.
Well, both guys are definitely going to be taken and be worth a lot of fab this upcoming week, this upcoming Monday. So we'll see what happens with those guys in their next starts. Maybe the fab will be worth it. Maybe the fab won't. I know one guy that is pretty much owned in most leagues, who me and Colin are really huge fans of, Clevinger, goes 5 1/3, no earned runs, 5 strikeouts, and he looked great. I wish he could go deeper into games. I don't know if he's conditioned for that yet, but maybe down the road he'll be able to. I love Clevinger. I know you love Clevinger, Colin. So let's go to Randy here. Talk to me a little bit about Clevinger.
I like Clevinger, but I don't love him. Isn't that a game show or something, like or love? I like him, but I do think that you hit it. The issue with him is going to be going deep into games, because he's still, you know, he has a tendency to get into some 6, 7, 8 pitch at bats, you know, fairly regularly, that drive up the pitch count. You know, but on a per inning basis, he's going to be up there in the top you know, I would think probably 30 pitchers in the league when everything's said and done. So, you know, maybe the lack of innings will bump him out of the top 30 at season's end. But he's, yeah, I definitely like what I saw that first start, and I liked him coming into the season, like I said.
No, he'll be in a top 30 pitcher for sure. You know, he might get in those 6, 7, 8 pitch at bats, but he's always going to end them with a strikeout. So I misspoke a little bit earlier about Ohtani striking out Trout on 3 straight fastballs. That was actually Clevinger. And I know, Mike, you didn't have the pleasure of watching that start. You kind of just followed along with our chat as I kept updating you. And this is one of the ones that I sent to Nick Pollock over at Pitcher List. Just every single time he would strike someone, I was like, hey, do this one real quick. Do these 3 fastballs to Trout. And then the next one was a slider that was absolutely filthy to Andrelton Simmons that made him look silly. So with Clevinger, you know, he's going to be a top 30 pitcher. Like you said, Mike, he's on both of our teams. We love him, and he's going to be the real deal.
Yeah, I was really excited from what I saw with Clevinger. Another guy that I know you're excited with, Colin, and you got a lot of guys on this list that have had a good start here. Brad Boxberger, who thought after the first week of the season we'd be comparing Brad Boxberger and Brad Hand? Boxberger has 3 saves, 4 innings, no runs, 6 strikeouts. Brad Hand has 2 losses and 4 innings pitched with a 4.5 ERA. Boxberger looks great. Talk to me about these guys, Colin.
Yeah, I like to play roulette whenever I go to Vegas, and I just kind of put Boxberger, I put Clevinger, I put those guys on the roulette wheel, and luckily they fell. So it's no skill, it's all luck for me. But with Boxberger, I have so many shares. I was all on him being the closer the whole time. I was a little nervous about Archie Bradley. I thought they might just stick with him, but I like how he's transitioned to the larger role as far as innings. And then with Brad Hand, I'm a little, you know, he's one of my guys too in a few leagues. So I think he'll come around. I think the Padres are still kind of figuring out where they're at. But with Boxberger, I'm loving it.
Randy, what are your thoughts on the success me and Colin are having here with Boxberger? I know you have one share, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I have 2 shares of Boxberger, actually. But sorry, I got distracted. CC he tried to bend over to pick up a ground ball, and I guess he didn't quite make it all the way there. And Anthony Santander got an infield single out of it, so it was funny. But, you know, Boxberger is somebody that, you know, we talked about on the podcast. I liked him. It was just, you know, a question of whether he was going to get the job or not. He's got it. You know, he's always been a good pitcher. The only question with him is health. So, health willing, I expect him to stay the closer all year and challenge like a top 10, top 12 guy. As far as Hand goes, I'm not worried yet. But of all the guys that came in, you know, to the season as like in the top, you know, 15 or so of closers, excluding Knievel's injury or anything, he's the one, I guess, the first kind of – he's got the first little red flag next to him, at least for me, as somebody I'm at least specking in that bullpen. Kirby Yates is somebody that's been pretty good over the last couple of years. Maybe he would get the first crack, but I do think Hand is safe at least for now.
And there's a couple more guys here, so bear with us. We're going to get into a guy I don't want to talk about, and I wish we were not talking about on this show. Felix Hernandez had the great start against Cleveland. Everything was good. Everything was bright and shiny. And then he goes and faces San Francisco, gives up 8 runs in 4 innings, barely touched 90 miles per hour at this fastball, giving up homers to Pablo Sandoval, Brandon Belt, guys that he wouldn't normally give up home runs to. So it went from a tale of 2 starts here where everyone was so happy with what he did in Cleveland against Cleveland to everyone down on him in San Francisco, what he did against San Francisco. And the problem seems to be you don't know what you're getting from Felix at this point. You don't know if it's going to be a good start. You don't know if it's going to be a bad start. He seemed to make adjustments in that first start. He kind of reverted in the second one. So a big problem Mariners fans are having here are they don't know what they're going to get. And that's almost worse than knowing what you're going to get. Even if it's a bad start, not knowing what you're going to get is almost worse because you're expecting the best and you're getting the worst. Randy, what did you see from Felix these last 2 starts, and what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think I can speak for Colin on this and say that neither one of us are surprised that this has happened. So I think we're just going to turn it back over to you and let you just keep going, man, because I'm 100% not surprised that he had a good start and then his next start got rocked by a pretty bad Giants lineup in San Francisco. So let me just turn it right back to you and let you go for a little more, because I am not shocked whatsoever.
I know Colin wants to touch on this.
Yeah, I'll pile on because that's just what I do. So Felix Hernandez gave up 8 earned runs to the team that had 3 runs out of their first 6 games, and they were all by one.
They were all 3
player?
Panic home runs.
They were due. Right? They were due. They were due.
Okay. Yeah, that's the issue. They were due. No, I'd like to keep this show to fantasy relevant pitchers. So if we can move on to the next player, I'm going to agree with Randy, and we'll just move on from this. Who is this guy again? I don't remember his name.
We can move on, but you better believe that if he has a good start this week, we're going to be right back talking about him on next week's show. So we'll see what happens this week. Brad Peacock, Jordan Hicks, 2 awesome relievers. Hicks, 4 1/3, no runs, 3 Ks. Hopped on the scene at it. Didn't even pitch in Double A, and I think he has the eight fastest pitches in the major leagues that are being recorded this season, all over 100 miles per hour. I think one of them even touched 101. Brad Peacock, 5 innings, no runs, 7 strikeouts. Another one of our guys here, another one of the favorites on this Dirt Dogs podcast. 2 relievers. Has Brad Peacock cemented himself as the best multi-inning reliever in baseball, overtaking Andrew Miller? I know it's not being discussed too much, but I think it's definitely a possibility. What do you think about that, Randy?
I still think Miller's the better pitcher, but Peacock might have more fantasy value because I mean, I don't have Miller's game log in front of me over the last couple of years, but I know he doesn't go 3 innings very regularly, whereas I feel like Peacock is going 2 and 3 innings, you know, kind of every time he takes the mound there. So he might actually, and if he ends up getting a couple of starts at some point, he might actually have more fantasy value, even though Miller's still the better pitcher just in general.
And I think Peacock has at the very least, cemented himself into that number 2 spot as far as multi-inning relievers, ahead of Josh Hader, ahead of Chad Green, ahead of Chris Davinsky. Because what Brad Peacock did last season and now is continuing to do this season, he's just missing bats at an absurd rate, and everything seems like it's going well for him coming out as a reliever as opposed to being a starting pitcher. Colin, between Peacock and Miller, who would you rather have right now if you're redrafting? Till the dawn.